And you're very welcome to the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show this morning. The entertainment slot, that is indeed entertainment. And we are joined in studio by two guests. We have Michael Leddy and we also have Sinead Breen. And a very good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Great to see you both. Right, I just get me mics right here. Right, here we go. I think I have it right there.
Okay.
It's going to be a busy show because there's a lot of interesting stuff on, some interesting films out, one of which in particular I'm looking forward to, and also a BBC programme that I am really looking forward to because we get to watch a new programme and relive our youth at the same time. Michael, I want to begin with you and The Killers of the Flower Moon. Now, this looks like it's one of these films that seem to have Oscar nomination just written all over it.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is going to be one of those that everybody will be talking about when Oscar time comes, although obviously there is Oscar buzz around it already. It's Martin Scorsese, it's Leonardo DiCaprio, it's Robert De Niro. He's obviously collaborated with both of those men a few times in the past, but the three of them together is actually quite rare. They did a short film or something in the past, but to see them together. This is a true story. It was an acclaimed book in 2017, so this is an adaptation of that story. Briefly, giving nothing much away, it's set in the 1920s in Oklahoma. It's about the Native American Osage Nation, who became oil rich when a lot of oil was found on the land that was there. They had the rights to it. They had held on to it when America kind of formed around them. And as a consequence of becoming very wealthy, they, one by one, started to be murdered off. And it's quite a horrific story, and being a true story as well. It's kind of a mirror to the ugly history that America was built on. So the story focuses on Leonardo DiCaprio returning from World War One to live with his uncle, Robert De Niro. And Lily Gladstone is the lady that is of the Osage Nation. And there's a love story, although, of course, DiCaprio was kind of pushed into a marriage, sort of, you know, matchmaked into a marriage. Yeah. And that becomes the story then as regards what's going on here. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? How is it going to turn out? It's Martin Scorsese film, so you can probably guesstimate that it's probably not a romantic love story from beginning to end. Excellent performances. Excellent subject matter, because again, it is, and that's why critics have really responded to this so well, particularly in America. Because again, it's the history of America, a very recent history, and it's an ugly sort of, it's this thing of rich, powerful men who don't care who they trample across or who dies to satisfy their greed. And that's, you know, that's very, you know, it's a very timely kind of story. There's one speech that a character gives that could be Donald Trump speaking at one point. It's very short, but it's about, you know, the attention span and the outrage of the public and how people forget very quickly and move on, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting because films like this, sometimes they can be open to the accusation that they just become way too worthy and way too self-important.
Yes.
And they lose sight of the fact that when we go to the cinema, by all means, you go to be educated. By all means, you go to be enriched. But you also go to be entertained and you don't go there for a lecture. Does it avoid that pitfall?
I don't think it does, to be quite honest. And finishing off kind of my comments with the sort of the negatives, I would agree with what you said. It did feel, now I sometimes, as Fanula will tease me sometimes on and off air, I do embrace those kind of movies from time to time. I don't mind them. But in this one, I didn't feel that that aspect worked quite as well. And the big thing, we saw it on Sunday night, Fanula was there, and we came out kind of feeling the same thing. For the subject matter, no matter how worthy it is, this is a 3.5 hour film. I think it's far too long. We both, like the first thing she said coming out was that could have been done in 2 hours.
That's not the first time that's been said about Scorsese.
I agree, yeah, absolutely. But I was, I mean, I the Irishman was fairly long and I embraced that really quite well. This one I didn't, I have to be honest. And I'm going, like the critics have, I mean, it's all in the high numbers. Like you're looking at 93% on Rotten Tomatoes and 85% on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience. People have embraced it. I didn't embrace it. More than anything, it reminded me of a 1980s 90-minute TV movie. There would be these, you know, these worthy Hallmark movies. That they, like you might have someone like Ed Asner or James Garner playing the Robert De Niro role. Some up-and-coming star like Robert Urich maybe is the handsome, you know, young man coming. You could see it as a 90-minute story.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been just as good. Now, the cast are exceptional in this. The cinematography, the what Scorsese brings to it is exceptional. But I lost interest about halfway through. Now, a major actor, and I didn't know was in it, a going into the halfway stage, maybe but the last act of it probably is the best way, but last third of it, a major actor shows up as a new character and it does reinvigorate the movie to some degree,
yeah.
But not enough for me. I just thought it was too long, far too long. And I, because of that, I'd only give it like a 6 or a 7, despite all the other stuff. You know, I wasn't, I'd go right back to what you said, Don. Entertainment.
It's funny, you have actually, this is the biggest fear I have about this particular film. You've just actually told me my fear is actually correct. This is one of those ones I'll probably wait actually until it comes out on Sky Cinema and probably watch it there.
And someone else said to me during the week that the thing about this is waiting for it and then turn it into a miniseries. Watch an hour and a half the first night, watch an hour and a half the second night, because there is a nice break in it, as I say, and you don't feel the hard slog of sitting there for like 3.5 or 4 hours. You know, a much better cut of this film would be, I mean, the same cast, same story, but just shorter. I mean, again, you can't, I love DiCaprio in particular. I think he's, every time I see him, I'm amazed by what he does. But you don't need 3.5 hours of it.
Right. So that's Killers of the Flower Moon, which is on in cinemas at the moment and is going to be one of the big Oscar contenders when that rolls around early next year. Sinead, turning to yourself, something slightly less worthy. Let's go to Netflix and the Gilmore Girls.
The Gilmore Girls. Well, I haven't really traditionally watched Netflix very often. To tell you the truth, it's more one-off movies at certain times of the year with kids, like Halloween or particularly Christmas. So my eldest, who is nearly 16, decided a couple of weeks ago we were going to binge watch Gilmore Girls. So it's basically set in Connecticut. It was made in 2003, so it's an oldie.
Yeah.
7 series of it, so between 21 and 22 episodes per series. So it centres around Lorelai, who as a 16-year-old got pregnant and it went down like a lead balloon with her parents. She was an only child and her parents were very well-to-do and very well-respected, had a high standing in society. So to cut a long story short, Lorelai left the family home unannounced and she moved to a town, a small town about 30 minutes away from where it's set in Hartford. And then she had her daughter, who is also called Lorelai, but is shortened to Rory. I have to say, I actually loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It was easy watching. And even though it's 20 years old, it doesn't feel it. It was actually very much ahead of its time. So there's a strong relationship, I suppose, and not always in a good way, between the mother and the daughter. Sometimes you see the daughter, Rory, taking on the more, you know, strong person role in the house. Lorelai tends to be a wee bit ditzy and flit from one thing to the next. I love the relationship between her mother and, you know, Emily, Lorelai's mother, so the granny. I suppose if I'm being honest, it reminds me of me and my mother a bit, especially when she turns around and she says, "Oh, for God's sake, Lorelai." It's like, "Oh, for God's sake, Sinead." But it's just really good fun. It's easy to watch. And to say, I would definitely recommend it. Yeah,
it's one of those programs that seems to get the balance right between family drama, a little bit of comedy, a nice easy watch, but not shirking away from the difficulties in a story. It does. I mean, we're talking about balance, maybe in one context with Flowers, you know, our Killers of the Flower Moon. Maybe in this instance, it's the case of what happens when someone actually does get the balance right.
100%. I totally agree with that. Like, there is a little mix of everything. We see, you know, we see even down to Rory's boyfriends, without giving too much away for anybody who hasn't watched it. You know, we see she's got the good boy next door and then she kind of turns it on its head and she goes for something very different. Mm-hmm. We see how the dynamics within the family change because of that. The relationship changes with her grandparents even over that. We see that, you know, she's looking at going to college without giving away which one she opts for. She has a dream she's had since she was a toddler, and I'm at that stage now where she's going to college and something unexpected, of course. And it just shows you, it's very true to life, isn't it, that we can plan everything with the best of intention.
Oh, yeah.
And something can just throw us a curveball and away we go.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. I watched one or two episodes when it was around at first in the 80s, but I couldn't say I followed it in any huge great detail, but I may take a look at that. Michael, Fistful of Dollars is on T.G. Cahir. I say T.G. Cahir can be great for a good Western.
It can be great. Now, actually, this was on last Friday. I was watching this last Friday night, and then the second one is on tonight. I'll miss it.
A few dollars more, is it?
Yes, for a few. Yeah, exactly. These movies from the 1960s, three movies, Sergio Leone, Clint Eastwood, very famous, very iconic. The sort of movies, and this is something I say a lot on the entertainment slot, sort of movies that a lot of men of, and when I suppose of my generation would have seen growing up, but maybe haven't watched. I hadn't seen these films. I haven't watched these in decades.
Yeah, likewise.
And you're kind of like, they come on. And so I made a point last Friday night. I said, I'm going to watch this just because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And it was like seeing it for the first time. And I really appreciate it, truly. When you do this with movies, like Casablanca is another one I've talked about in here, that when you see them with fresh eyes, you go, oh yes, I see why this is so highly regarded. And I see why it's such a pivotal film in film history. Because this was the first of the big spaghetti westerns. It reinvented the western at the time when it needed it, because the western genre was actually dying out and would die out a decade and a half later. By the time you got to the late 70s, westerns were no longer the big thing. You know, up until that, westerns, you were always westerns in the cinema. That was what they did. So they were coming to the end, and this reinvigorated them for a final decade, and it changed the perception of them. They were suddenly down and dirty. It wasn't, you know, and Eastwood was doing Rawhide at the time. He had finished, I think he was coming to the end of it. He said in an interview at the time, I was looking it up, that he loved doing westerns, but he had played the white hat too good to be true hero for too long.
Yeah.
He liked the idea of playing the anti-hero.
The man with no name.
The man with no name. So the story in the first one was, I was surprised at how clever he was. He's a stranger, comes into a town, there's two warring gangs. And it was, for a violent film, there are long stretches without action, because actually it's all about how he plays the two gangs off each other. And he's basically a hired gun, but he works for one gang, then he works for the other gang. Then he's an information broker, but he gives information to one side. And it's all about something he saw at the start of the movie. He saw, arrived in the town, he saw a child running around. He sized up the town pretty quickly. The town was in a bad state. And basically, he sets about, for his own mysterious reasons, fixing the town and basically getting rid of the two gangs. But he does it in a sort of an anti-hero kind of way. The climax, the final shootout, was stunning. I really was stunned. I had no memory of ever having seen it before. I was really stunned by how clever it was, because it was foreshadowed throughout the movie with like suits of armour and different things were showing up. But then when he's out on the street at the end, I don't want to say too much, but it was on last week, but he gets shot and just gets up every time. And the characters who are against him have no idea how he's doing this. And we know, but we haven't been told, but he just keeps getting up. Every time he's shot, he stands right back up and he keeps taunting them and keeps coming at them. And it's stunning.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. I say I'm out of the house tonight because the One Act Drama Festival is on here in Letterkenny. But I will be watching. I'm going to watch the trilogy. I'm presuming if they're showing the first one last week, the second one tonight, T.G. Carr are obviously moving on to The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. It must be next week, I'm assuming. Yeah. I haven't looked it up. I say it's online now. I could look it up. But it is great. And they have a long... They started that slot in 98. I was looking it up. And the slot has consistently won for them. Because it's really clever counter-programming. Yeah. Friday nights are a late, late show for a lot of people in this country. But if that's not your bag, and you are staying in, there's a lot of people who just want to watch a Western. Particularly Westerns that a lot of us grew up watching. And for me, last Friday, it was like seeing it for the first time. I really loved it. I mean, 10 out of 10. And you read up on it afterwards and you think, oh yeah, it really is that good. I see why it influenced cinema for decades
and
after.
And they're the films that established Clint Eastwood as one of the coolest. I mean, you know, there is nothing cooler than Clint Eastwood in those films.
I agree.
Let's be honest. I mean, there is nothing cooler than that.
Yeah. And he knows how to play those characters. And in films like Where Eagles Dare as well, he often wants dialogue removed. He's one of those guys because he can do it with presence, and that makes him more iconic and more cool.
Yeah. I'm going to take a short break, and when we get back, I'm going to talk to you, Sinead, about something that I'd say a lot of people who followed the Wagatha trial are really, really looking forward to. We're going to be talking about that after these. 21 and a half minutes past 11 o'clock. It's the entertainment slot on the 19 and Noon Show on Highland Radio, joined by Michael Leddy and also by Sinead Breen. Going back to those in just a tick, just a comment in from one of the regular listeners and contributors to this programme. Hi, Donal and the TV Delights. You two, I presume, is what that's referring to. Just a couple of comments. Obituary, fiendishly funny, looking forward to series two. Coincidentally, it finished on Halloween with a Ballyshannon horror connection. It was a great show. I raved about Obituary at the last time I did this programme, actually, on a Friday. And yeah, it absolutely delivered right through to the end. Brilliant. If you want some humour, Caddyshack is on Comedy Central at 10 o'clock. That's a great film. Oh, I see that by the look I'm getting from Michael. Michael agrees.
That's a classic.
It is. It is absolutely a classic. The death of Matthew Perry obviously being marked here. Sadly, we recently lost the guy who made everyone laugh. Do seek out the reunion from 21 afterwards. Everyone's favourite. He had so many quips and one-liners. And that's absolutely a welcome comment. I presume yourselves and Greg had a good conversation about Matthew Perry last week.
No, the news hadn't broken.
It was Friday evening it broke.
Yeah, it was quite late it broke, yeah. I mean, I didn't hear until Saturday, yeah, so we hadn't, but yeah.
I was away last week,
yeah. Again, what's to be said, iconic, yeah, so yeah, funny, a tortured man in real life, but yeah, beloved by everyone who worked with him, which says a lot. I've been reading a lot of tributes. And for all of us that were huge fans of that show, you know, it's indistinguishable, the line between Matthew Perry and Chandler. I mean, that was one of the things. It's his delivery makes the character, so he is the character. It's just, it's sad for all of us, you know, because...
I think it's the fact, too, that so much has come out since then. The same, even, I suppose, to go back to somebody else, with George Michael, that we heard so many good things that he did for people under the radar after his death. And, like, that's just heartbreaking that he worked so hard to help so many other people, but he could never quite get that help that he was able, you know, that he needed to get himself, you know, the way he needed to be.
Yeah, funny, absolutely.
It's funny that you mentioned George Michael, because I remember, you know, I watched that George Michael, the documentary that Andrew Ridgely was so closely involved in some time ago, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that documentary, actually, because I'm going to be honest. I was an indie kid. I was a cool music fan.
Of course.
To me, Wham were the absolute antithesis of good music.
Yep.
At the time, I loathed Wham with a vengeance. Now, here's the thing. You put on Freedom, my foot's tapping.
Yeah.
Put on Careless Whisper, it's a great sax solo, it's a great song, but oh, it's Wham, you can't like that.
Yeah.
But no, I actually watched that documentary, and it's funny you talk about the revision when you get a bit older. Especially as music fans. And if there's any cool music fans in their 20s listening to this, I was you once upon a time. Believe me, in 20 years' time, you're going to love the Sugar Babes. I promise. Okay, I'm going to take a break in just a moment. Just before we do, let's just look at the Agatha Christie trial. You've been looking at this one, Sinead. I'm sure a lot of people... And I know some people that work in the newsroom in this building are really looking forward to this one.
Okay, this was really good. Now, I have to be completely honest on this. I thought to myself, this is going to be 3 hours of pain. I followed it all, the trial, forensically when it was going on. I found it fascinating. But I'm allowed to say bitch fest on the radio at this time, am I?
Well, fair enough.
It was a real bitch fest.
Caroline will come in, you know, the big cane will go around and Sinead will be gone.
But it was so good. I suppose, look, I love football. So at the first hour, you know, ran through the start of Wayne's career and how they met and where they were at that time and how they got together, how their relationship progressed. We got a look around his trophy room. It wasn't all Man United, thank God. You know, we've seen a lot of their personal side and how their wee family dynamics worked. And she's a very, very hands-on mammy, which I love.
Mm.
Because I'm a hands-on mammy, but she's got tens and tens of millions at her disposal, but she doesn't use it. She just revolves around her own family and her immediate unit. And then we see how this first transpired. We see that alarm bell's gone off on her, you know, private Instagram account. And then we see how she whittles it down and found what she found. And that was, we knew all that, but it's still fascinating to hear it from herself, how she did this. And she's very dynamic about it.
Because I was actually wondering, was it too soon? Because, I mean, it seems like only about 3 or 4 months ago it was actually in the news. And I was thinking, maybe, should this have taken a year or two just to sort of give people the benefit of a distance? But you reckon it isn't too soon?
No,
it's really good to watch.
Not. Yeah? And we hear from her, the three main persons of her legal representation, and they're fascinating. Like, I loved that part of it in the third part.
Yeah.
Especially where they outline, now there was a lot of hard work had to be done, and how they turned this case around is fascinating, because it was absolutely not going in their favour for a very long time. and how they used the WhatsApp messages between certain persons in it to their advantage, to prove. And I suppose what I really found, you know, hysterical about the whole thing was that people that follow the courts, you know, be it journalists or commentators, and they're used to really high-profile, high-court cases.
Yeah.
And they're here commenting on Becky Vardy and Colleen Rooney.
Yeah, that's true.
It was bizarre, but brilliant.
Right.
Very well,
I'm going to pretend I won't watch it, but I will. Michael, are you in the same boat?
See, no, I won't, because if I'm going to watch it, I don't think it'll be Gilmore Girls. We were chatting about this off air.
Yeah,
I mean,
enough.
This is so... I didn't even know who these people were when this came up before. I had to figure out... I remember the story, so...
Yeah.
I was aware of it, of course, it was such a big thing, but I hadn't even made the connection, so I won't pretend that I will watch it. No.
This sounds a really interesting one. Okay, we're going to take a short break, back after this. We're going to take some music in a moment, and we're going to play one of the most talked about songs and we're going to do that in just a few moments. But before we do that, I want to talk about, there's something I'm so excited to talk about, and I can't hold it back anymore. Doctor Who is back!
Yes.
I am so excited about this.
Very excited as well. I'm very a lifelong Doctor Who fan. So Doctor Who, briefly, it's coming back. We're getting three specials this year. It is the 60th year of Doctor Who. That's an incredible achievement for any TV show.
Yeah.
Very few TV shows. It's mostly soap operas that get to last for decades upon decades. But Doctor Who is unique because it lasts all those decades, but it reinvents itself. It's not just that it recasts the lead actor, but a new producer comes in and the new producer puts a whole new stamp on it. This was the case in the 70s. You had Barry Letts. That was one type of Doctor Who. Then you had John Nathan Turner. That was a completely different type of Doctor Who. Same thing is true now. And the most recent Doctor Who producer was Chris Chibnall, who brought social conscience and social awareness to the show for the first time. Not all fans embraced that. I know you didn't embrace it.
I loved Jodie Whittaker.
But the type of stories weren't well embraced. I thought it was great. It was about time the show did something different. But now we have a return to the new producer of the show is the old producer of the show. Russell T. Davis, who brought the show back in 2005, he's back at the helm for the foreseeable future. And what's very unique about these three episodes is they've brought back arguably the most popular modern Doctor. David Tennant is returning, and one of the most popular companions is back as well. Catherine Tate is returning as Donna Noble, which is very interesting because those of us who are fans of the show, and I was chatting about this at length during the week with some friends, the ending, the final arc, the arc conclusion of her character was absolutely brilliant.
It was.
But it was so sad and tragic that you were like, I didn't want that to happen to that character, but it was such a great ending, you can't complain. But they're now going back to tinker with it, and I'm actually kind of delighted because I want Donna to have a, not a better ending, but I want Donna to have a different ending. So we get to see her back. They're so good together. It helps that David Tennant and Catherine Tate are such great mates off screen. Yeah. If you've ever seen them doing their own things or seen them on quiz shows or chat shows and things, they're just the best mates.
Actually, is the Comedy Relief special they did sometime when David Tennant was a French teacher.
Yes,
and
she plays the character. Yeah, the character.
And that is just amazing.
Yep.
That is just amazing.
So that's it. It's back. And the key thing, the reason for mentioning it is we have our dates. We have the 25th, Saturdays again, 25th of November, 2nd of December and 9th of December. And the other thing that's exciting about this returning is that it's now a co-production with Disney. There's a bigger budget. Now, Davis hasn't said how much they're getting, and he has said it's not in the same league as Star Trek or the Star Wars TV shows, but they have a bigger budget than they've ever had before. Now, long-time Doctor Who fans know the budget's not important. It never was important.
Well, that's true.
Never important, because some of the best Doctor Who stories are still the ones from the 60s and 70s, but it's cheap as chips. It's cheap.
Oh, totally, yeah.
But it doesn't matter, because writing... But now you're getting the quality writing and we're getting some good visuals. The trailer... I sometimes avoid trailers for spoilers, but I couldn't do it this time. I had to watch it. And I love the look of the show, and I love the new iteration of the theme tune as well. Have you heard the new theme tune?
Nope, I have avoided everything.
Oh, the
and
new
I
theme tune
everything.
Is beautiful.
I will avoid everything.
Beautiful. There's like a... Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
What I'm going to do is the week before, or a couple of days before, I will watch Jodie's last episode again.
Oh, yeah.
I will watch that again.
Yeah.
That's what I will do.
No
trailers, no...
Loved Jodie, loved Bradley Walsh, loved her arc. I would quite happily have seen another season of Jodie.
Mm-hmm. We do,
but I would quite happily have seen more of that. But that's not the way Doctor Who works. They always leave the stage and they always leave you wanting more. And there's a lot to be said for that. And I think in the anniversary year, it's great that, as I say, arguably the most popular and most famous of the modern Doctors
and the wonderful thing is they have access to the timey-wimey, wibbly, you know, track, so they can do what they want, really.
I love the way that that expression from one key episode has completely dominated pop culture.
Perfect.
But it's in every fandom.
It is so perfect. Yeah.
It crops up in Star Trek fandom. Yeah. I'm on sites, and every fandom uses it now. But it all comes from that one.
Timey-wimey, how better can you put it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's genius.
Yeah, absolutely. Music-wise, I have a recommendation for anyone who hasn't seen this already. I am, as you know, a huge Bill Bailey fan. The comedian. And Bill Bailey did a program on TV years ago called Is This Bill Bailey? And it was his first real sort of starring role as six episodes on BBC, broadcast late night on BBC Two. He does a feature on Doctor Who, which starts with a whole commentary on, as you were saying yourself, the whole thing with the wobbly sets and the old Doctor Who, and how he speaks about, aren't computers great? But remember when the entire Doctor Who, you know, sound department was one guy going and just pressing it in. I'm like, wah, wah, and then he says, but I always imagine the theme tune differently. And he plays the Doctor Who theme as Belgian jazz.
Oh my goodness.
Look up, this is, do yourself a favor, look up Doctor Who. Bill Bailey, Doctor Who.
I love Bill Bailey, but I've never seen this.
No, he does. He takes the theme, and what he does with it is, it's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I'm adding that to the list under Caddyshack.
No.
Because I will do that when I go home.
Caddyshack is on. Now,
yeah.
I'm going to leave you to your own devices for just a few moments, because we're going to go to our draw. Because next weekend, Friday the 10th to Sunday the 12th of November, the Ardra Matchmaking Festival is taking place, and one of the organisers is Stephen McCall. Stephen, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well indeed. No surprise to anyone who knows Ardra that Stephen McCall is going to be involved in something that's going on there. Tell us about the festival, Stephen, and how this came about.
Well, I suppose the festival has been going for about, I think it's about 15, maybe 17 years now. We missed a couple of years with COVID, but it's been running. We've tried it in different routes. We tried different directions with it, and we had Willie Daly, the famous man from Lisbon, Varney here with us. But generally, it's a bit of fun and it's a bit of crack, and we have a very good matchmaker this year, an excellent person, great personality, bubbly personality, and plays a bit of music and sings a song, so he's really looking forward. He's setting himself up on Saturday in the afternoon, probably. We've set up a den for him in the corner house, so he'll be working from there from about 4 to 7. Then he's going to ramble around all the different venues and towns and the eating houses and see who he meets and who wants to meet him. And he also does an interview with them, and then he will assess them, and then he gives them, I'm not certain how he'll do it, but I would imagine he'd probably go with a coding a card for everybody, so that if you meet somebody with a green card, you're probably compatible with them. So it's up to you to do the rest, Donald.
And are you inviting people effectively to come to our draw and actually take this seriously and go with a view toward perhaps meeting that someone special?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose we've had 5 or 6, certainly, people who met up there and actually have developed long relationships. Now, I certainly know one couple got married from it. So, look, it works for different people. Different people take it in different ways. I remember a guy coming wanted very serious about, he had a big farm and he wanted to meet a young lady and he wanted to develop a family, and it was very, very precise what he wanted. And actually, I think he did all right, you know.
Obviously, a lot of entertainment taking place around as well. You've got John Joe McBrearty and Belfast Jimmy back. You've got the Matchmaker in Residence, as he said, Saturday from 4 to 7. Mm-hmm. You've also got the Duck Street Band in the Beehive. You've got the Jazz Time Swing Band in the Corner House, along with the Resident Band. And a lot of that will take place in the yard, weather permitting, which has to be said, I suppose, in November. And then Eunan McIntyre playing on Saturday with a lot of music around as well. So, I mean, it's going to be fairly hopping in our draw over the course of next weekend.
Well, we hope so. But also, there'll be a lot of entertainment in other places, like, you know, Teagues and Doherty's and Nancy's all very much contribute to making this a success. So there's a lot more activity than just one or two places, but there's a core there for people to come and look at. We work it effectively in Ardra. We very much work off ardra.ie. that's our flagship. Yep. And like, you know, we had to deal with accommodation and that, and we, anybody that's looking for accommodation, Ardra, if they go to ardra.ie, we have a network there whereby if somebody contacts that, it'll be notified to about 40 different service suppliers and mm-hmm. they'll be accommodated. So at work, you got to do this in small communities, Donal. It's not easy to survive, you know, it's mm-hmm. difficult. We don't have the infrastructure that the rest of the world has. So, like, we would have been running maybe 8 or 10 festivals a year just yeah. for that.
And in fairness, no one does festivals better than Ardra.
Well, we try to do them in different, like, you're not going to get the same people going to every one of them. So, like, when we did the Country and Western in January, it's for Country and Western people. And February, we used to build around Jimmy Kennedy sort of songwriting, and in March, then we sort of had, obviously, since Patrick's Day and the parades. Then in April, you're working for an event a month. That's the way I could see it. It's the same for every community. They need to do that. And there's no point people being bothered about going to meetings and not many turning up, because that's life. People will say, oh, it's great, it's happening, but some people have to do it and others do it. But if you get bogged down on who does what, you really don't get anywhere. So within a small community, the survival of a community is a number of people working together, and it carries the rest, and it works very effectively. Like, we, you know, you probably saw this night, we were on the Two Johnnies this night mm-hmm. on RT2, and that sort of adds to the publicity of a small community and helps along the way.
Stephen, all the best with it. It's great to see Ardra buzzing, as Ardra always is, and all the best with the festival on the coming weekend.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Donal, I haven't met you personally, but I'll tell you, I was at the Tip O'Neill Awards last year when Moya Doherty and Kathleen Sheeran were honoured, two great people, and amongst others. Well, you were the MC, and that's what I was going to say. You did an absolutely super job. I'm always impressed with people who give good deliveries, and the presentation by you on the night was excellent, and well done.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed. Thanks. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go this year because of situations at home. But I thoroughly enjoyed that gig, and thanks very much indeed, Stephen. You have a great festival.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Right. How does one follow that? I'll tell you how we're going to follow that. We're going to follow that by listening briefly to a piece of music, and I think it's probably fair to say that this is the most talked about piece of music so far this year.
One, two.
I saw a rather interesting cartoon on Facebook this morning where someone was walking past a record shop, and there was a notice in the window saying, out now, new Rolling Stones album, new Beatles single. And the person asked, how far back did you turn the clocks? That is the new single from the Beatles. It's called Now and Then. It was put together by under the supervision of Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, featuring, of course, the voice of John Lennon and the guitar of George Harrison, put together from old tapes that haven't been heard before. You'll recall Free as a Bird came out a couple of years ago. But that's the latest one. That's Now and Then, the new single from the Beatles. You're enthusiastic, Sinead.
I am. I'm laughing, though, that you said Free as a Bird is a couple of years ago, because, like, I was a teenager when that came out.
Back, yeah.
So thanks for saying it's only a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was. It was. Do you know what? The older 90s, you get, you just completely...
Everything is... It's all, yeah. It's all... It's timey-wimey. It's all... It's all timey-wimey. We don't know. Everything's
wobbly.
Everything's a couple of years ago.
And I loved Free as a Bird as well, I have to say. It's nice. And it makes my mummy and daddy feel like teenagers again. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that either. Yeah. You know?
It's definitely, that's my first time to hear it. I knew it was coming out. I had seen read all the stuff. Really good track.
Yeah, it is.
Based on what we did. Really, really good, yeah. It's you would want to hear it again, yeah.
And to hear the voice of John Lennon there as well. I mean, you know, it just, it brings it back, you know, that how almost timeless the Beatles were, because it holds its own against anything. It holds its own against the Sheerans and the Adeles and anyone that's around.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Agreed, completely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Now, I'm always going to be more of a Stones fan than a Beatles fan. That's just the way
I will be honest. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
but you can't, like, you never turn off a Beatles song when it comes on the radio. You know what I mean?
It's Beatles. Floor or Oasis, there's still going to be some of it.
I agree.
Even though I was an Oasis girl, same. I still like some of Floor, except I didn't like that Milk Carton video. I don't...
Oh, the little running milk carton. I was completely in the Oasis camp as well. But Blur is still, like, I mean, you know.
No, I liked Oasis, but I would always have said that Oasis won the battle, Blur won the war.
Oh, very good.
If,
okay.
If you talk about the Britpop Wars, I would always say that Blur were the band. I think, looking back, I always think Blur were the band that came out of Britpop better than Oasis. Now, I loved Oasis.
Yeah.
And Columbia is one of my absolute favourite songs of all time. Columbia from the first album.
Yeah. Well, I think with me and Oasis, and I'm a hardcore fan, it's the later albums. The last couple of albums really do it for me more than the early albums, which is completely against...
That is interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's
Master Plan.
You see...
Master Plan. Greatest B-side of all time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's the greatest B-side of all time.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Yeah, totally. But yeah, I really... Like, I go back to and listen to the later albums more than the early albums. That's weird, but I know it's not.
Yeah,
but
I am. Early ones.
Yeah, yeah, and most people are. Most people are.
But no, I will be
like Hindu Times and Hung in a Bad Place. I think it's incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's an incredible piece of music. But most Oasis fans wouldn't have that in their.
I have to be honest.
10.
I have those two albums at home, and I probably listened to them once when they came out. I probably played the CDs once or twice. And
I go back to them now. I do go back to them more than the early ones.
I would listen to. I would go to definitely maybe and
it's a great album.
Fantastic album. Yeah. And you know, and what's the story? Morning Glory.
I loved Be Here Now. I loved that album. And then it's sort of a controversial album because even the band have sort of said it was overproduced and gone. I don't care. I think it sounds amazing. And I have, but now I think all these years is what 5-6 years ago since it came out, Dull. But I, all these years later, because everything's about 5. But you know what I mean? It's now being reevaluated as being like, actually, no, it is good because you know it had this thing of, oh no, it's overproduced and the tracks are too long. I couldn't care less. I think it's just a great album as well.
I would agree with that. Yeah, no doubt about it. But that was it's very, very good. And as we said, it does hold its own. Let's go back to you, Sinead, because you want to look at Lupin, which is on Netflix.
Yes, I've literally just watched the first 10 minutes and I quickly realised that the only thing that stops really my kids from watching it is actually the language.
Okay.
So I had to put it off, but I'm very, very interested.
And what is it? Like, it's I've heard about this, but is it detective? Is it? No.
It's basically about a house. It's... And from what I've seen, the main character played by Omar Sy, he's very charismatic. So he seems to use his charm to kind of, you know, fix the situations to whatever he needs them to be. So he seems a very clever, articulate
That name
character.
Is making me come to a really potentially dangerous assumption in my head as to what this is going to turn out to be.
Basically, there's a lot of heist scenes in it, apparently. Now, I've just seen the trailer, and that's all that
I've seen. And will you go back? Is it enough 100%? To put... Oh, you're definitely hooked. You're hooked.
I just need to watch it now when the kids are in bed earlier next week. Like, because I would have watched more. But trying to get them to bed before 10 11, well, it's just not wrong.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I mean, when I see the word Lupin, the first thing I'm thinking is werewolf.
Yes.
That's the first thing.
Yeah, you'd be thinking.
So are we going down? Is it going to go down those lines?
I just don't know yet. It's sort of a take on a lot of different programs. You know, and a lot of different, like the Italian Job has an influence, a very strong influence on it. Apparently, Yeah, and even the remake of that, I loved.
Yeah. Okay. I'm always going to go with the original, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
I mean, it's iconic.
Yeah.
And I don't normally like remakes, to be honest. So I enjoyed that. So and this is somewhat of a remake. It's a retake on a lot of other programmes.
Okay.
Interesting.
With a different twist.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to take a very short break back after these. I'm going to go back to you, Michael, because I want to talk about, and you referenced this briefly earlier, the One Act Drama Festival taking place this weekend in Ungraden Theatre. And it's been a huge success, this particular event. It's happened now for a number of years. And gone from success to success. And it's a really, really good weekend of entertainment.
It's a fantastic... It's one of the highlights of the year for me every year. You get to go 3 nights in Greenland Theatre and you get to see 3 plays every night. 3 plays tonight, 3 plays tomorrow night. And they start a bit earlier on Sunday because there's adjudication and everything happens, whatever. But you get to see 9 plays over the weekend. You get to see... And the beauty of it is... If you don't like the first one, you're probably going to love the second one. Yeah. You know, you're going to see a comedy followed by a drama. You're going to see something maybe abstract and surreal followed by maybe the most typical Irish, an Irish wake. You don't know what you're going to see, but you're always seeing there's certain groups, gunpowder. You know, there's certain groups that they're from down the country that always deliver. So looking through the list of plays, myself and a friend Tom, who's also big into all this,
Tom
very well. We don't know the scripts, but you know the groups, and the groups never fail to deliver. So it's going to be fantastic. And it is just, for what you get, the bang for your buck, as you would say, is
the weekend ticket is €25.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's 9 plays for €25.
Oh my God,
yeah. That's less than €3
a play. Yeah. And each of those plays is about 40 minutes long. You're getting a full night's entertainment when they're back to back. It's not too long a night. You're not going to be tired out. And you get, and there's the whole thing as well as seeing the plays. It's like the Eurovision, which I haven't watched in years, but I remember when I did watch the Eurovision, the fun of it then is everybody does their own voting and everyone is like, do you think that's going to come? Who's the best actor? Who's the best actor? And then you sit there on Sunday night and you watch the adjudicator get it completely wrong and you scold about them and you go down to the bar afterwards and you say, did you really think that Dull Kavanagh was the best actor? Did you really think he was? Well, all right. And you chat about it for ages and it's great crack. You get to dissect. And usually every year, you have your own marking sheet as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you can write it all down. And myself and Tom never agree. What can I say? Tom is usually wrong about these things. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to put that out there. But we never agree. And that's the fun of it. The fun of it is the discussion. And you get to have an adjudicator. And in fairness, joking aside, the adjudicators are always fantastic. You know, they really are. They come up and they insightfully criticise and point things out. And it's just great fun.
And indeed, just by happy coincidence, we've just had a message in. Best wishes to the committee of the One Act Drama Festival. It kicks off in Ungreenan tonight and runs tonight, Saturday and Sunday. Sadly, I won't make it either tonight or on Sunday because I have other gigs on. But I may get there tomorrow night. Hopefully, I will. Before we go, very quickly, let's talk about The Miracle Club, because this is a film I've seen the trailer of. This looks really interesting to me and I feel I really want to see this.
Yeah, very briefly. I went along to see this a couple of weeks ago. It's 1967, it's Dublin, outskirts of Dublin, and four women from three different generations go to Lourdes and we follow their story, basically. And it's the casting is what makes this an enjoyable film. Laura Linney, ever since Tales of the City, I've loved Laura Linney. I think she's an exceptional performer. Then Ozark came up and everybody came on board and said, yeah, she's an exceptional performer. She is amazing. She's the linchpin of this. You got Maggie Smith, you got Kathy Bates. It's a story that they were trying to get onto HBO as a TV movie back in 2005 with that cast. Took them this long. The cast stayed attached. There's no great surprises in it. Mm-hmm. It's a very ordinary sort of story. It's not normally what I would be drawn to. Story didn't really do much for me. It was fine. But the performances are excellent. Again, Maggie Smith, Kathy Bates and Laura Linney. And they have a very dark and tragic backstory shared amongst these women. So it's the story of a trip to Lourdes, but it's really about the past and forgiveness and the paths that these women are on.
Sometimes sometimes some of these films can get very Irish.
And
a bit stage Irish and a bit like, you know, sit down there beside the turf fire with your shillelagh. It's not like that.
It's not like that, but there are some critics commenting and a lot of audience people commenting the fact that you have all these Irish women and not played by any Irish actresses, which maybe in 2005 you could fly it a little bit, but things have sort of changed. I wasn't bothered by it. I don't think it's stage Irishy in that way. I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's still a very, I hate to use the word cliched, but you know, it's a version of Ireland in the 60s that you've seen before. Now, it doesn't mean it's not authentic, but you know, and part of the comedy in this comes out of, because it is a light as well as a dark story. It's a light story. But a lot of the comedy comes from the fact that while the women are away in Lourdes, the husbands cannot cope without them. And it's the 1960s. And this idea of the missus heading away for like a week or however long the pilgrimage was, it's unheard of. How can she do? How am I supposed to make a sandwich?
Yeah.
So you get a lot of that. And I liked that part of it. But again, we've seen it before. You know, you've seen that sort of stuff before. But it still works.
Michael, for some reason, it has suddenly, talk about timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, it's suddenly become 2:30, 12 minutes to midday, and I've no idea how that happened.
Couldn't happen.
Michael and Sinead, thank you very much indeed. One of the things I absolutely love about doing the show is doing this on a Friday, and it's always the best to crack. Thank you very much to both of you. Thanks to all our contributors. Thanks to you, most importantly, for listening. Caroline Orr produced, and as always, when I'm in here, she held my hand right through the weekend. Thank you, Caroline, for that. Greg's back next Monday. Coming up after the headlines, it's John Breslin around the Northwest. But for myself, Donal Kavanagh, it's been a pleasure. Have a great day.